Comedian Louis C.K. recently tweeted, "My kids used to love math. Now it makes them cry." Thanks, standardized testing and Common Core. Well, does his experience speak to you? It's an experience shared by a number of parents trying to wrap their head around the new curriculum adopted by 44 states several years ago and currently being put into place. This hour, we'll discuss the new methods of teaching math and answering your questions about how to navigate the new system. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster, and for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, it's 608, not the area code, but the time, here on Tuesday, June 10th. Are you a teacher, a parent? A student working with the new Common Core math curriculum? Has it been easy or difficult for you to grasp the concepts being taught? We hope you'll join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. My guest this hour is Mike Steele. He's Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Professor Steele, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, what are some of the new changes that we're seeing in math instruction these days?
Well, so some of the new changes that we're seeing actually are not terribly new. Most of what we have in the Common Core are initiatives that we've been working on about for the past 20 years in mathematics education. One of the great criticisms of our curriculum here in the United States as compared to other places, this is a phrase that gets tossed around a lot, you may have heard, is that the curriculum is a mile wide and an inch deep, that we cover a lot of mathematics content in very superficial ways. And so kids come out of their mathematics experience knowing how to do a lot of different procedures, some of them correctly and some of them less so, but not understanding kind of the bigger whole and what's really going on. One of the reasons we've been trying to address this relates to the vast shortage of STEM majors, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics students. Nationwide, we've got about 24% of students who enter their college experience intending to be one of those STEM majors. At the back end of that, we get about 6% that actually enter the field in those majors, and certainly those are areas that are absolutely critical for our advancement as a society.
Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through some of the typical problems that are being taught or some of the mathematical styles that we're starting to see now?
Sure. What the Common Core really tries to put forward is a continued emphasis on understanding and making meaning. The standards are a collection of benchmarks. These are the sorts of things that we want students to learn and when we want them to learn it. For example, I think about a problem like 23 plus 18. When I was an elementary school student, I'd write the 23 up top, I'd write a plus sign, I'd write 18 below. You know, I'd do 3 plus 8, I'd carry the 1, I'd put a 4 down, and I'd get my answer of 41. That's actually the most efficient way to do it. That's the quickest way to do it, and it works really, really well. If I'm standing in the grocery store, in the hardware store, and I need to do 23 plus 18, I'm probably not going to get out a piece of paper and do that. I'm probably going to think a little bit more flexibly about it. So, for example, I might think about, okay, 22 and 18 I know makes 40, and then 23 is one more than that 22, so that gets me to 41. I might think, well, 18 is close to 20. If I make that into 23 plus 20, I'm at 43, and then I need to go back 2. So it's that sort of mathematical flexibility that people do every day that are the sort of things that we want students both doing in their mathematics classes and talking about in math class.
So how do you break down something that is probably a fleeting thought in your brain while you're at the grocery store onto a piece of paper and present it as a math problem to students?
That's a great question, and that's actually been one of the challenges that I see as districts are thinking about Common Core and rolling that sort of these sorts of problems out to students. One of the things that I think is the most important is that we want students talking about mathematics and students talking about multiple mathematical methods in class. So that process that I just stepped you through is the sort of thing that I'd want, if I walked into an elementary school classroom, to hear kids talking about and to be sharing those methods and to be talking about them with their peers. And to do that, we we have to have teachers who really are equipped to say, okay, for this particular addition problem, I know that there are three or four different ways that kids might talk about it. These are the ones that I want us to share. These are the reasons I want us to share them. And at the end of the day, at the end of this chunk of instruction, here's the ideas that I really want kids to walk away with. I want kids to be able to do it whatever way they can, but to have some really efficient algorithms for doing it, just like you and I did in school, at the end of the day, when things are done. So that's one of the real challenges here. Another challenge we're seeing with Common Core is for the first time, the standards actually specify what students should learn at each grade level. Previously in Wisconsin, and this was really the case nationally, our sets of state standards in mathematics usually were at three grade levels. So Wisconsin is, I believe, 4th, 8th, and 11th grade. So if I was, for example, a 6th grade teacher, I'd have a set of things that I knew we were going to assess by the end of 8th grade, but I'm not sure which of those I should really be working on in 6th grade. One of the things Common Core tries to address is to really lay out a nice progression of ideas. Here are the things students should be working on at 6th grade. Here are the ways those build the 7th grade, the 8th grade, into high school.
So you talked about having students talking to each other about mathematics, and certainly under the new curriculum, the students and teachers both have a shared vocabulary about that math. But when they come home and they're confused about their homework and they turn to mom and dad for help, mom and dad don't know exactly what's going on. What advice do you have for parents to get on the same page about what's happening with the math curriculum?
The first, and I think the most important advice I have for parents is to be connected to your district. So be connected to the teacher, email your teachers. I was in a classroom as a middle school teacher 20 years ago, and email was just at its very beginning. I think parents have a real wealth of ways to reach teachers these days. I didn't have a phone in my classroom 20 years ago. Most of our teachers today have a phone, they have voicemail. So the important thing for parents is to be in dialogue with your student teacher and be in dialogue with your student. Ask your student to sit down and show you what are some different ways that you learn to do this. I think teachers and districts, as we start to really push towards this sort of meaning-making, these ideas of multiple representation, of number sense, of mathematical modeling, that teachers and districts have a really strong obligation to communicate to parents about, here's what we're trying to do with our mathematics program. Here are the sorts of problems that you're going to see that exemplify the things that your students are going to be doing in class. And here are the resources we have to help them out. There's also a lot of fantastic resources online. A lot of times I think of that from the perspective of supporting the teachers I work with. But those resources will work very well for parents as well. If you get online, if you search for alternative algorithms for multiplication, for example, if you have a student who's in the middle elementary grades, you'll find a wealth of information that explains 10 different ways to do multiplication.
We're talking with Mike Steele. He's Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And we're talking about the new Common Core curriculum standards for teaching mathematics. We'd like to hear from you this hour. What questions do you have? Are you a parent? Are you a teacher? Are you perplexed by the new system? Or are you grasping it well, but finding others who could use some help along the way? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. You can also leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the new Common Core math curriculum with Mike Steele. He's Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Jennifer on Facebook writes, no problem keeping up with my kids so far. I think it's important that they are teaching kids multiple ways to solve the same problem. What I don't understand is why parents are so against their kids learning a different format than the way they learned. Not everyone thinks the same, and multiple ways to solve the same problem should help to reach more kids. Would you agree with that, Mike Steele?
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. One of the things that I saw when I was a middle school teacher is that I had a particular way of thinking about mathematics, and probably 28 of the 30 kids in front of me thought about it in a slightly different way. And actually listening to kids and learning about the ways that they thought about math helped me grow my own mathematical understanding, and really presenting those different ways helped reach all of my kids, particularly my kids who had traditionally struggled with mathematics, that seeing a different way was really helpful in moving them forward. Just seeing the same way again wasn't really going to work for them. In terms of why parents are afraid of this, we've got a tremendous amount of anxiety kind of as a nation about mathematics. I don't know how, I can't count the number of times that I've heard somebody say to me, parents when I was in the classroom, you know, folks out in the community now, oh, you know, I wasn't good at math in school. That's not a statement we hear about reading. People don't say, you know, oh, I was a really terrible reader. There's almost kind of a point of pride about struggling with mathematics. And it's been a really intractable problem in our nation. And this is one of our efforts to really start to say, you know, math makes sense. Everybody can learn math. And the more that we kind of approach it in these multiple ways, the more we're going to get people coming out and saying, you know what, I feel good about being able to do that.
And as I've read some stories and some parents' reactions to Common Core, I've heard them say things like, geez, my third grader is learning things that I didn't learn till I was in sixth grade. Would you say that the new curriculum is pushing students to achieve a higher grade of math, or is it just taught differently enough that it seems harder than the way we learned it?
I think there's a little bit of both. So there are certainly some concepts that as Common Core came out were moved around, particularly here in Wisconsin, actually where the Fordham Institute went through and rated the previous set of state standards for, I believe, all 50 states as compared to Common Core, and Wisconsin standards performed at the level of a D. So the standards that Common Core was replacing weren't tremendously rigorous in comparison to the rest of the nation. So there is some content that has shifted, that has moved. I think the focus also has been getting more in depth with mathematics, changing some of the approaches to the mathematics. For example, we're trying to look at geometry in the high school from a transformational standpoint. How do you move shapes and structures around that keep things the same or that changes them, rather than what many people experience as the dreadful two-column proofs that really were the sum total of a lot of people's high school geometry experiences. So there's some of each. We're trying to move some content a little bit more to the forefront that may not have been there before. And we're trying to go into further depth with some content. And I think those are both things that parents might recognize as, hey, these are things that I didn't do in my own elementary, secondary experience with mathematics.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Eugene and Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning. I taught math for a few years. And what I did, I taught the kids how to think with numbers. For instance, when I taught them how to multiply two-place numbers, you'll say 25 times 25. Okay, 2 times 2 is 4. Write that down and add 2 zeros, so you got 400. Then you cross-multiply each way once, and that gives you 2 tens. So 2 tens add 1 is 20. Add 1 zero, and you got 200. All you got left is your 25, pretty much. That works. That process works for all 2-place numbers, and I had students down as low as the fifth grade once they learned their multiples to be able to do that. And then you said you used 23 plus 18. My way of doing it would be 2 times 3, 2 plus 1 is 30, and you got 10 plus 1 would be 41. I always started on the left. I started with big numbers and worked down, pretty much.
Great.
But that process, the process worked.
Well, I think that's actually, Eugene, a great example of the sorts of flexibility that we're trying to promote with students now. I think to go back to 23 plus 18, I think kids often see the 2 plus 1 and they don't articulate what you just said, which is that's really 20 plus 10. And that's the important aspect of place value that helps kids understand just how to take numbers apart and put them back together. If they understand that in elementary school, actually algebra is going to be a breeze for them because that's really just about the same thing, taking numbers apart and putting them back together.
Thanks for that call, Eugene. And that also demonstrates exactly what you were saying. It takes a multitude of ways to solve the same problem, and it's just a matter maybe of, I don't know if you'd call it preference, or is it something that's more biological, or is there a certain way that we think that is simply different from one another, but not in a qualitative difference, rather just a way that we have evolved to think differently?
There's a little bit of it that's preference in some places, but there are also some ideas that we know develop in particular ways with children. So, for example, if I go to the early elementary grades, as students are learning to add, let's just say 5 plus 3. So one thing that students might do to start is they might count all of those up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8. And they might count on their fingers while they're doing that. They tend to move from there to an idea that we call counting on, which is I'm going to start with my 5 and then just add 3 and go 6, 7, 8. They'll eventually move from there to just really memorizing and knowing that 5 plus 3 is 8, and they won't have to recreate that. So there are some places that research has shown us this is kind of the progression of how kids think about a set of mathematical ideas. Those progressions in some places are built into the standards in terms of what we expect at different grade levels and how those build. And there are a lot of resources for teachers right now on learning progressions and learning trajectories that help get that information in the hands of teachers. Here's the evolution of how your kids are going to start thinking about fractions and good places to start and where to go from there and where we'd like them to end up.
Is it okay to count with your fingers? I ask because, well, you know, my nephew, he's 5 years old, he's going on 6, and he's already getting some mathematical concepts. I was very impressed because I don't remember when I started to do basic addition, but he'll use his fingers. And I went to a Catholic school that said they did not want to catch us counting on our fingers, and so I always have had a negative impression. I just thought that's cheating in a way. But is that an effective tool, at least to some degree, as we get started to grasp the basic arithmetic that that our elementary schools are hoping to achieve?
It's absolutely the right starting point. Kids come into elementary school with a lot of intuitive mathematical knowledge. Sometimes we don't use that. Sometimes we have an experience like you're talking about, Cynthia, where we're told not to use that. Don't count on your fingers. So that's exactly the right starting point. I think the next question I'd ask a student who I see counting on their fingers a lot is there a way to do that where you didn't have to count every single number? Maybe I could start with the first number. What would that look like? So asking those questions to continue to get kids to think about, is there a way that I can do this more quickly, more efficiently, differently? Those are going to be the kind of questions that parents can ask their kids and that we want teachers to ask their students to move them forward.
Diana emails, please ask Dr. Steele to explain the difference between curriculum and standards. Also, how does the Common Core prepare students for college?
Diana, those are great questions. The difference between curriculum and standards is a really important one. And in a lot of the debate that we've seen on Common Core at our state level that I see online is about the confusion between the two. Standards are just a set of learning outcomes. These are the things that we want students to know and be able to do mathematically. So, for example, if I pull up my Common Core standards, and I happen to be looking at sixth grade right now. One of the standards in the number system is compute fluently with multi-digit numbers and find common factors and multiples. So that's a standard. There are 100 different ways that we could think about putting a curriculum together, a set of tasks, things that the teachers are going to be doing with students that would help get at that standard. So there's a lot of variability in terms of the curriculum that teachers might use. As with anything, there are some great curricula out there, and there are some not so great curricula out there. A lot of the examples I see online, for example, the thing that Louis C.K. tweeted, mm-hmm. the particular example with his kids' homework, some of the things that I see on Facebook and I see on Twitter are good ideas that were really kind of poorly written from a curriculum standpoint. So I think that their heart's in the right place in terms of what they're trying to get students to do, but the execution just is not so good. In terms of preparing kids for college, that's really, really important. Sometimes you hear a lot with the Common Core state standards about this idea of college and career ready, which is one of the things that the authors of Common Core were really trying to target, and the National Governors Association is one of the groups that was behind the development of the Common Core.
And Professor Steele, we'll pick that up after the news. We'll talk a little bit about how Common Core might help our students prepare themselves for college. We're talking with Mike Steele. He's Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the UW-Milwaukee, talking about the new Math Common Core curriculum. You can call in at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If your child brings home his or her math homework, you might find that the equations are no longer as straightforward as 2 plus 2 equals 4. Now you might find that the curriculum relies more heavily on word problems, maybe pictures and concepts, and it has some people a little bit confused. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on Tuesday, June 10th. Are you familiar with the new math standards? Do they make sense to you? Are you struggling to help your child or your grandchild with their homework? Are you a teacher, and how easy or difficult has it been for you to change the way that you teach math? You can let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. My guest is Mike Steele, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the UW-Milwaukee. And Mike, just before the news, we were talking a little bit about how Common Core might help prepare students for college. I'll let you pick up with that point.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart as someone who works with future math teachers. I want students coming to college with really strong mathematics so I can recruit the best and brightest to become future secondary math teachers in our schools. One of the ways that Common Core does that, particularly at the high school level, it really emphasizes a lot of different areas of mathematics that are woven together. So, for example, when I was in high school, the typical sequence that I went through was a course that was called Algebra 1, and then a course that was called Geometry, and then Algebra 2, and then kind of moving on towards calculus. Certainly, algebra and geometry are incredibly important. But in terms of broad college readiness, I want students exposed to ideas of statistics and probability. For example, students going into journalism, students going into psychology, I mean, they're going to need some really strong foundations in how to look at and make sense of statistics. Students that are going into the medical profession, nurses, for example, use a ton of proportional reasoning. If I increase this quantity by this much, how much does this other quantity go up by? So really that sort of thinking, you know, and not just manipulating X and Y around, and drawing some graphs, those are the sorts of experiences that I think Common Core is really aiming at for students in the high school so that they are more broadly fluent with mathematics in ways that are going to help them in a wider range of careers at the college level.
Hmm. Let's take a call from Greg in Milwaukee. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I like I said before, it might sound really weird, but when my daughter was, the first thing I said to my daughter when she was just pulled out of my ex-wife, I said hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and sang all the elements. Then I every time I would change her diaper, every time she got colic, I would sing the multiplication tables. I would sing things like 4/3 pi r cubed is the volume of a sphere. anything I could think of to teach her when she was just an infant. She got her master's. She never got anything less. She never got a C, ever, for a report card grade. She always got A's and B's. And I can't understand why parents can't teach their children when they're young. You can teach them so many tricks, like when you add up the digits, if you can divide that by 9, you can divide the whole number by 9 or 3. I can't understand. I can't understand how people can't teach their own children.
How about that, Mike? So Greg was saying he started when his child was just an infant. What more can parents do as their children are growing up, even before they enter the school system?
Well, certainly singing to them the elements and the formula for the volume of a sphere are nice starts. Not everybody necessarily has this. I can't even remember all of the elements on my periodic table. I have to take it out when I need it. So I think Greg's in a great position there to be able to do that. I think for all parents, asking their children as they're growing up, what do you notice? Asking them to count things, asking them how did they get that answer rather than just confirming that the answer is right. That's the sort of dialogue that's really going to help students in those early years think about mathematics as a way of thinking that makes sense, not just as a series of tricks that we do with numbers and steps that we learn and reproduce.
We've been focusing quite a bit on the perspective of the student and the parent, but what about the teachers? As they've had to transition to this new style of teaching, what kind of education have they had to undergo?
There's a number of different dimensions in which we can think about how to get teachers up to speed with Common Core. The nice thing about this, particularly in the state of Wisconsin, is there is a great statewide mathematics teacher leadership group and culture that really supports teachers across the state in continuing to learn and think about these ideas. So these are standards that hit in 2010. Many teachers in the state have been thinking about them almost from day one. So the sorts of things that teachers need to think about, there's some shifts in the content that we talked about. For example, at the high school, there's a stronger emphasis in the middle school and the high school on statistics and probability. And there are some concepts in teaching statistics that I see in the high school that I think I first encountered when I was a graduate student. So if I were back in a high school classroom, I'd really have to think about how to focus on learning some of that content so that I could teach it well to my students. And there's work that's been going on across the state through the Department of Public Instruction, to our Wisconsin State Mathematics Institutes, which go out during the summers around the state and work with teachers on content that are really important. The other piece of this that's particularly relevant to the work I do at UWM is supporting teachers in thinking about how to teach the mathematics, even if they know the content well, how to teach the mathematics in ways that bring those multiple solution paths out, those multiple ways of thinking, and then brings things together for kids. So it's not just kind of awash in a sea of six different ways to approach this problem, but we can say this way is a little bit more efficient. This way is the way I can use if I forget what the formula is. So really supporting teachers in getting good discourse going in their classrooms. It's not something that we've historically often seen at the middle school and high school. A lot of times it's desks and rows and kids doing individual work, and certainly that's so important. But we also want to see kids talking about mathematics. I want to see students really becoming the authors of the mathematical ideas rather than just the teacher saying, here's the example and here are the 7 steps you need to do it.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, have the textbooks caught up with Common Core, or are teachers trying to teach alongside textbooks that still follow outdated standards?
We're getting there with textbooks, but we still have a long way to go. A lot of the early resources were repurposed large publisher textbooks where there was a big sticker on the front that said Common Core aligned. When you opened it up, it was largely the same content that we'd been using 20 years ago when I was an 8th grade teacher. So there's still quite a ways that some of these curricula have to go. The nice thing is that there are a lot of online resources for teachers. They vary in quality, but there are some really, really good sites. If teachers are listening, the places I'd direct them to are places like illustrativemathematics.org, which is a collection of good math tests that you can use in the classroom that are aligned towards the set of standards. There's a great site that's really interactive and multimedia called LearnZillion that's great for teachers and parents that embody some of these ideas. So we're seeing the resources start to pop up. But many, many teachers are kind of building the car as we're driving it in some sense, is that they're coming up with great mathematical tasks and great things to do with students kind of before textbooks have caught up. I've seen some wonderful things that teachers have done in their classrooms on that front. And there are a lot of districts also that are saying, let's hold off on a textbook adoption until we find something we really want. So there are some things out there that are Common Core right now. Many districts I've spoken to have said, we're going to wait a year or two until we get something that we know is going to be really great for kids.
Mm-hmm. Chris on Facebook writes, couldn't many different curriculums cover the standards? How or why does establishing a Common Core standard lock teachers and schools into a specific curriculum?
Well, I think that goes back to this difference between curriculum and standards. So Common Core doesn't lock teachers, districts into a particular curriculum or say you have to teach this mathematical idea in this day of seventh grade. It's not that structured. So the Common Core standards are a set of learning targets. So these are things we want students to learn by the time they're done with seventh grade. And I could imagine doing that with a variety of different curricula. And so what teachers and districts decide to do within that set of standards is really their decision. One of the benefits of having a common set of standards, though, is that as students move from district to district, as they move from state to state, we've got a much better idea of what I can expect that student to know. When I had a new student in my eighth grade classroom that may have moved just from the next county over or may have moved from another state, I had no idea coming as that student came into my class what their mathematical experiences looked like. And that's different now.
We're talking with Mike Steele. He's Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And we're taking your questions and comments about Common Core math curriculum and standards at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Common Core math curriculum and instruction. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest is Mike Steele, Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Taking your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can leave us a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's take a call now from Dale in River Falls. Hi, Dale.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan of the power of estimating, and I don't think that that can be stressed enough at all levels. So just a simple thing of, you know, if I'm paying $600 a month for rent and I've got 10 months, asking students to say, you know, what answer is going to make sense? Is this going to be $60,000? Is this going to be $6,000? And then working backwards from that standpoint to kind of fine-tune the answer. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on the power of just teaching estimating skills.
I think that's tremendously important, Dale. I mean, it's one of the things that I used to emphasize in my own classroom with my students. Oftentimes, my middle school students would multiply decimals together. They wouldn't put the decimal point right exactly where it belonged because they didn't remember how to do that. And it wouldn't occur to them that their answer was, you know, about a factor of 10 off from where it needed to be. So I think it's those sorts of estimation skills that help students continue to think about and make sense of the mathematics and ask themselves, after I've done this procedure, does my answer make sense? And that's the thing that I think I want every student to be asking of themselves from elementary school all the way through high school. I think some of the ideas that we have in the current set of standards here really press on getting students to estimate, getting students to make sense. The very first of the standards for mathematical practice, which cut across all grade levels, are make sense of problems and persevere in solving them. And I think that making sense of mathematics piece is absolutely critical.
Let's take a step back just a little bit, and let me ask if the new methods for teaching math are they closer to the methods used in other countries that are in which the students are testing higher in math? Are we trying to achieve maybe similar instruction patterns as countries in Asia?
There are, I think, pieces that we're borrowing from a lot of great success cases that are out there in terms of other countries. One of the things I see when I look at instruction in Japan that's really good is that teachers are asking a lot of really good questions. And so that's one area that we're trying to get our United States teachers to continue to do and to think about. From a content perspective, one of the things that we see in almost every other country is that they're covering fewer mathematical topics, but they're covering them in more depth. And I think that's inherent in the way that we've organized this new set of standards. So I do think that we've been looking at those sorts of practices that have been successful with other students in other countries that have been consistently high achieving in mathematics.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but what's an example of a good question that the teachers are asking over in Japan?
Well, one good question that I've seen asked a lot in the context of algebra, my experience with algebra was largely symbols, X and Y, manipulating equations. And so I'd work through an equation, I'd get a solution, X equals 7, Y equals 8. One of the things that I see teachers asking in other countries, and I also see them asking it a lot here, is, what does that solution mean? Can you show me X equals 7, Y equals 8 on the graph of that equation? Can you show me where that shows up in the table of values? So really cutting across those representations so that it's not just let's work on symbols, but let's make sense of what this really means. And I think another point that you made as we were coming back from the break and talking about word problems and context is another big thing that I see quite often is instead of just kind of a problem that's naked numbers, that's symbols and I've got my solution and I don't know what it means. If we work on a lot of those problems in context first, in making sense of the context, I would say, so in the context of your problem, what does X equals 7, Y equals 8 mean in terms of where we started with this application?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call from Allison in Plum Lake. Allison, what's your question or comment?
Hi, I was an asthmatic child and sick a lot as a little girl. And in third grade, I remember vividly missing about a month of school because of bronchitis and coming back, and there were twice as many numbers on the page. And after that, I had a severe math anxiety. And my mom had gone to Wellesley and majored in math, was a great musician. I was a musical child. So I saw pattern, and I, you know, didn't have any fear of anything at school. I loved school. So after that, I remember tests would really cause a lot of panic. And I think there's a huge connection between how girls are taught math, because girls are more verbal, like you just said, and their context needs to be in words. Boys, I think, have an affinity with the symbol. And so if you could teach music and math together to small children, they would overcome fear of manipulating numbers. They would find it fun. And then they would have less fear of money and financial understanding later in life. I think they're very connected.
Thanks, Allison. What's your response, Mike?
Well, I think that's a great point. I've actually been a musician myself since I was 5, and I can really identify ways that music was about exactly what Allison's talking about identifying patterns, about seeing replicable structures that recur again and again and again, and kind of noticing those patterns and what they build up to. I also hear a lot of stories like Allison's, where people can pinpoint the exact experience, the exact moment that turns them off to mathematics. And it tends to be where things got complicated and the only way out we had was to memorize a procedure, or a teacher said, no, don't do it this way that you're comfortable with, do it this way. that's consistent with the way everybody else is doing it. So creating those opportunities for kids to use a wide range of ways of thinking about mathematics is going to help stem the tide of these sorts of stories that Allison just related.
Let's take another call here from Andy in Montello. Andy, what's your question or comment?
My comment is I think we're getting too abstract with these young kids in teaching mathematics. I think we need to focus on arithmetic. I disagree, especially in the primaries, trying to teach several different ways to solve problems. If parents don't understand and can't help their young kids, that's going to fail. We've observed that in our school districts, and I think in many school districts.
Thanks, Andy. And Mike, I'll let you respond to that, and then if we have time, I'll have a follow-up for you.
Sure. I certainly feel Andy's frustration. And for parents who haven't seen some of these multiple methods, it can be really confusing. I think the important thing to remember is that kids come to their mathematical experiences in elementary school already thinking in multiple different ways. And to me, it's never a matter of I want kids to know to reproduce five different ways to do something necessarily, to add two-digit numbers. It's more that I want them to have a method that they're comfortable with and they can do. And if that's different from the kid that's next to them, I think that's fantastic.
Well, you know, thinking about that, what's your advice to parents who open up their child's homework and they actively want to help their child do better in math, but they're intimidated by it? What's your advice for taking a step back and just getting control of what's going on?
I think the first thing to do is to talk to your child. Is to say, can you show me how you worked with this today in class? A lot of times I think that's going to get parents really, really far with their students in terms of helping support the sorts of understandings that we're trying to foster in the classroom. I think the second part of that is make sure you are in communication with your child's teacher, with your district, and asking good questions about what sorts of learning are we trying to promote in mathematics? What are the sorts of strategies that I'm going to see my kids come home with? Where should I go as a parent when I get stuck? Many curricula, many of the resources that teachers are using, there are places that a teacher can point them to online. There are emails a teacher can send that say, here's how we worked with multiplication today. That would go a really long way in supporting parents and their children and really doing good mathematics together.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Cynthia. It's been a pleasure.
Mike Steele is Associate Professor of Mathematics Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He's been talking with us about the Common Core curriculum standards and education and instruction for mathematics. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing the hour and for on-air direction. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.